God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
God of the universe created the world. He didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I'm Todd Herman. Is it possible, you think, for an entire group of people to become psychopaths? Weird question. As far as I know, in the research I've done, becoming a psychopath is not contagious. Behaviors can be passed on, for sure. I mean, we are part nurture, part nature, right? Behaviors can be passed on, and cultures can build. There was this funny thing, you know, when I worked at Microsoft way back in the day when I used to care about tech, and God blessed me with that opportunity to go do that. The culture there was so funny. There's a way of speaking in tech, or there was back in the day, that everybody had to turn their sentences into uptalk. You remember that phrase from Seinfeld, uptalkers? Well, I guess probably the best way to pursue this is sort of to, go to a fail fast behavior. That was another thing, fail fast. They had all these words. And all cultures do that. They have in speak. And it's a way to make sure that the out group doesn't know what the in group is doing in speak. Or is it dress? Were you dressed at Microsoft? One day I showed up wearing a sport coat because I had guests coming in from the East Coast. And they were media people, TV ad buyers, and big agency heads. And so I was dressed appropriately. And I was talking with a guy who was interviewing me for another job there. I guess, what, better job, more responsibility, more money? Friend of mine. I walked in, he goes, dude, you didn't have to dress up for me. Like, that's gross. He's sitting there in a ripped T-shirt and ripped shorts. I guess the further down you dressed, in a way, kind of the bigger deal you were. This is just kind of a cultural thing there. So is the word kind of. No, they would kind of do that, sort of kind of. And what it was, I thought, was a way to soften being a direct boss. Well, kind of. I hope you would sort of consider maybe kind of softening things. All cultures have these habits, these in-speak habits. They can also have really negative habits. Sometimes at Microsoft, people would steal whole organizations, literally steal them. You'd have someone who was a director, a senior level director. They went home from work one day and they had, let's say, 100 employees, and they went back to work the next day and they had 3. Oh, we did a reorg. Oh, by the way, at Microsoft, heads, people were currency. But they weren't psychopaths. There's tech people doing tech people things. But is it possible for an entire culture to become a culture of psychopaths? I guess it is. I knew a family once that had fights in the backyard. Now, I've joke about this, and I understand this is an offensive phrase to some. I do understand that. I joke about this, that I took a genetic test and found out I'm 77.97% redneck. I know that offends some people. I take it as an inner joke because my family's jokes about this. But yeah, I grew up next door to a family, and they would have backyard fights. That's just settle things that way. It was a culture of violence. They were nice enough people to other people, but in family, they just beat each other up. It's not a great culture, is it? So the reason I ask this is it possible that we've created a culture of psychopaths in DC? Because the alternative to this would be that Washington, DC is utterly owned by lies. And who again is the father of lies? If only there was a book that would tell us. Let me give an example of why I'm on about this. That's another in-speak thing. Wow, you're really on about this. I am. That's a radio thing. You're on about it. I am. See, I used to be criticized for calling them the Mockingbird Media. Now the nickname has caught on and they deserve it.
Donald Trump is defending comments he made at a rally in Ohio warning of a, quote, bloodbath if he doesn't win the presidential election in November. Trump made the comment as he was talking about the auto industry vowing to impose 100% tariffs on some imported cars.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars if I get elected. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
Today, Trump insisted he wasn't talking about political violence at all, saying, quote, I was simply referring to imports allowed by crooked Joe Biden, which are killing the automobile industry. But the world saw what happened the last time Trump lost a presidential election as Trump's supporters violently attacked the Capitol on January 6th.
Now, this is what I'm talking about. It was a balanced report until that. They even provided the context. They don't provide the context of politicians and others in media saying bloodbath constantly. It's psychopathic. The Biden-Harris campaign statement on this. This is the headline. Biden-Harris campaign statement on Trump promising bloodbath if he loses. By the way, they capitalized he. Tonight, Donald Trump said there would be a bloodbath if he wasn't elected, and that if he lost, there would be no more elections. After opening the general election by meeting with his authoritarian leaders and rallying alongside conspiracy theorists, Donald Trump continues to praise dictators, promises to pardon political violence, and launch racist attacks against black and brown Americans. Man, he sounds like Hitler. Speaking of that, we're scheduled to be joined by Eric Metaxas, who can tell us some things about what Hitler actually did. Scheduled to join us just in this next segment. His movie, A Letter to the American Church, is an important thing to watch. So, the psychopaths. Why would I bring up psychopaths? You know who lies and enjoys it and will look you in the eye and lie? Psychopaths. Well, you think I'm hitting you? I'm not hitting you. You just think I'm hitting you. It's gaslighting. They'll lie. Psychopaths, like a friend of mine had a psychopathic girlfriend. And I'll never forget the conversation I saw after we saw her out with another guy. We saw it. They were holding hands in a bar, smoochy smooch. I was there when my friend confronted her. He said, please go with me. I'm afraid what I might do. He confronted her. She said, I didn't do that. What? I laughed. She said, I don't know what you're talking about. That never happened. I spoke to you there. No. No, you're wrong. She had a smirk on her face. This is from The Guardian way back in 2020. Here's the headline. Biden warns against primary bloodbath as Sanders sharpens attacks ahead of key contests. Sharpens attacks, bloodbaths. But yeah, President Trump, who said proceed peacefully, do not scuffle with law enforcement, go home, who offered 10,000 National Guard troops to protect the Capitol, he was all about seeing cops beaten up. Psychopaths would say that. This is probably an actual violent psychopath. So horrible. I cannot imagine. I really can't. You say that sometimes, and sometimes it loses its meaning. I really, truly cannot imagine this. There's a teen girl who was stabbed and another injured after these young women just didn't respond to advances from a man in Brooklyn. Happened about 2:30 a.m., Park Slope and St. Mark's Place. The altercation began when a man made advances towards the two young women, which they rejected. After being rebuffed, he returned later, banging and kicking on the deli's glass door. The group inside locked the door for safety, but eventually opened the door to let everyone out. That's when the man stormed in and attacked the women. Police confirmed both victims are 19, but have not released details about the suspect or any arrests. 2:30 in the morning. I'm a big fan for kids of telling you nothing good happens after midnight because nothing good does. Probably psychopathic behavior. go home and get the weapon and come back. That's a real bloodbath. So that brings us to a psychopathic statement from a member of the Democrat culture, the ruling boss culture. And here, the level of dishonesty in this statement from New York City Mayor Adams is like a biblical flood of lies.
And as I was walking down with the commissioner, you know, you hear a lot of noise about, you know, public safety in the city. This is the safest big city in America. We inherited a city where crime was up 40%. That is not the reality. It's down. Our subways are safe. This is great. Let's continue to enjoy the Irish community. Happy St. Patrick Day. Let's march on.
So, funny thing about crime being down. Want to know how to do that? Don't enforce laws. Crime will just bottom out. If you don't enforce trespassing laws and assault laws and drug laws and immigration laws, crime's going to plummet, baby. It was just this past weekend that there was an altercation on a subway. One man pulled a gun on another, and the guy who'd had the gun pulled on him took the weapon, fired, and killed the would-be assailant right there on the subway. If you don't enforce laws, crime disappears. There was a time in Stalin's Russia where they outlawed reporting crime. What was it that Trump promised to do to pardon Julian Assange? What did he do? Oh, that's right. He reported illegal activity by the government in terms of spying on us against our will, and they want him in prison for his life. Interesting. Yeah, there was a time in Stalin's Russia where reporting a crime was a crime. Because there was no crime in the Soviet Union, so you were a liar. Lying against the state. Another example of this. This is a guy named Representative Dan Goldman. I mean, title and name, Dan Goldman. He's a lucky dude. He is part of the Levi's fortune. Inherited some money and bought himself a seat in Congress, as I see it. Here's what he wrote on Twitter, and it's shocking. It's vitally scary. Vitally, vitally disconcerting. Quote, reports indicate that X, that's what Twitter is now, they want us to call it X. Reports indicate that X appears to have sold perks to a designated terrorist group in violation of sanctions laws. Rep Raskin and I are calling on Rep James Comer and the GOP oversight to investigate if social media execs are endangering national security or violating our laws. That is scary, scary stuff. Oh, just some context. This is from Mike Benz, who's a national security expert. Some CIA-backed paramilitary group funded by USAID grants was told to use Twitter by the State Department. And it looks like they're paying Twitter $8 a month. And they're going after Elon for it. Yeah, a subscription to Twitter is $8 a month. That's aiding a terrorist. How much weaponry did figurehead Biden and Austin and General White Rage, how much military equipment did they give the Taliban? Was it billions of dollars? How much money are they giving Iran, which is one with Hamas? Is it billions or hundreds of billions? Is it possible for an entire culture to become psychopaths? We're scheduled to be joined next by Eric Metaxas. It's difficult to operate in Christian circles and not know who he is. He's done so much for the movement. The new movie is called A Letter to the American Church. Hopefully Eric will be with us next. This is The Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. As I said before the break, it's difficult to operate in any evangelical circle or conservative talk radio circle and not know who Eric Metaxas is. He's an author and filmmaker, and probably the guy who you might remember the way I do. First time I saw Eric was when he kindly and gently took on Barack Hussein Obama, God rest Rush Limbaugh, at the National Day of Prayer. First time I saw him. Great humor, great man. Eric, welcome to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman.
Hey, it's my privilege to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's certainly great to hear your voice in person. And I want to get straight down to this because it's such an important topic. Your movie, A Letter to the American Church, has me nervous. And I'll tell you why. Is because I think you're absolutely right about where the church is at. But I have a nervous tendency when we start talking politics and churches. But let me ask you to make the case for where the American church is at today, because I think I agree with you where it's at.
Well, listen, I don't like to be right. I take no joy in getting it right if it's bad news. I just feel like, you know, we have to be faithful to what God has called us to do. And so when I wrote my Bonhoeffer book, I saw a picture of a church. Now, this is the German church in the 30s. This is not the church today in America. But the German church in the 30s was unwilling to face the evil of that time. They kind of acted like, well, theologically, that's not our job. Our job is to do church. We're going to sing hymns. We're going to preach the gospel. We're not going to deal with the evil of the Nazis. We're not going to deal with the fact that the Jews are being demonized. We're not going to deal with that. We're just going to do church. Bonhoeffer tried to get them to see that is heresy. That is disobedience to God. That is a religious excuse to do what you want to do and what to not do what God wants you to do. And he tried to get them to understand it is the job of the church to speak against evil, not just to preach the gospel. Of course, you better preach the gospel, but you got to make disciples. You've got to speak truth to people. They didn't want to hear that because that comes with a cost. And so they basically batted him away. They batted that message away, saying, we think, you know, you're getting it wrong. You're being too political. You just focus on church. And Bonhoeffer didn't want to be right, but he knew he was right. He kept delivering the message. And by the time the Nazis had really taken over and were able to completely crush the church, it was too late for the church to do anything. The church had a moment in time. It had like 2 years to wake up and to be activated, and not even 2 years. They didn't do it. They did not hear what God had to say. And so the church was able to be crushed, and the Nazis and evil were able to do everything that they did. And if the church had known what was coming, maybe more people would have stood up and spoken up. But they did not. And so here we are in the American church, and the parallels are staggering, absolutely staggering. People say, well, how could you possibly compare the two? Trust me when I tell you, if you gone to a German in the German church in 1933 and told him what was coming, he would have laughed in your face. There's no way in a Christian nation like Germany, a sophisticated, culturally, tremendously sophisticated nation, that any of that stuff could ever happen. You're crazy. Well, of course, it did happen. And just today in America, you have the same thing where people say, well, how bad can it get? Well, I'm here to say that if you look at the story of Germany, and again, I write about it in my Bonhoeffer book, but that's the longest book I wrote. The shortest book I wrote is the new book, Letter to the American Church, which has been turned into this film. And yeah, in Letter to the American Church, the parallels are clear that the American church is using the exact same excuses to avoid doing what God is calling it to do, to live out its faith in a self-sacrificial, loving way, to speak the truth, to stand against evil. It really is an amazing thing, and I believe that the American church is exactly where the German church was in 1933, 1934. There's a moment of opportunity. If we do not seize the moment and stand and fight, including getting involved politically. If you don't do that, in 5 minutes, it will be too late. And when you realize we should have done something, it will be too late. That's what happened to Germany. It's a chilling story. I write about it in the new book, Letter to the American Church. And there's a sequel coming out next month called Religionless Christianity, which is a Bonhoeffer phrase. But the sequel to Letter to the American Church is Religionless Christianity. And as you know, We've turned Letter to the American Church into a film, and I want to say this to everybody. It's available free to any church that wants to do a screening. Anybody else has to pay whatever the $9 to watch it. It is a great film, Letter to the American Church. I didn't make the film. It was made about my book, and I'm in it. But it is to wake up those who can still be awake, and the holy remnant that still has ears to hear and say, yes, Lord, you're calling your church to stand up and to fight for your purposes in history. This is about saving America for God's purposes, not for our own purposes. But I think that it's as urgent as anything I've ever written, for sure. And my prayer and my hope is that enough would wake up. Not everybody's going to wake up. Not everybody has to wake up. But enough have to wake up, and we don't have enough yet.
Eric, I love the explanation to that, and I think back to reading the book Bonhoeffer and how chilled I was when you actually described that thing about they sang the hymns more loudly as the trains went by. I mean, you actually, as I recall, described the scene like that actually happened. People saw the train cars going by. They saw the ash. They ignored this. The churches allowed the Nazis to come in and, hey, let's change how Jesus looks. He should look a little bit more this way. And I don't disagree with you at all about the parallels to this. I've seen churches stand by and agree to be told, you'll not preach the gospel because there's a bad flu. And by the way, we're going to also have you go ahead and start pretending that men are women. And I've watched that all happen. I have absolutely no disagreement with you whatsoever on the church standing up to that. I don't have a particular disagreement with taking the church into politics. Here's my nervousness, and you've probably solved this because you've studied this longer and you're smarter than me. Bringing politics into the church, Eric, Washington, D.C. is a fallen city. I lived there for 2 years. I was in the senior leadership team of the Republican National Committee, chief digital officer. I saw it. It's a fallen city. My nervousness is to open the doorway to bring in an evil into churches that aren't yet evil and bring division and to once again divide the body of Christ. But I'm sure there's a way to do this, and you probably describe it and can tell us, how do you put those guardrails up, Eric, so that we do not take what's to be a disciple-making body, not just a place you go and consume church, but we take people out into the world, as we're told in Matthew 28, to make disciples of all nations. How do you walk that line?
Well, I think we're way too nervous about that line. In other words, I think that that's what the enemy does. He gets us scared about, ooh, you're going to make an idol of politics. You better not get involved. Don't get near politics. It's like, listen, you can make an idol of your family. Don't love your family too much, but don't spend too much time with your wife. Be careful. You're going to make an idol of that relationship. That's from the pit of hell. And the idea that we shouldn't be involved in politics from the pit of hell, because I'm going to tell you, if we don't get involved in politics, Satan is already involved in politics. And we are where we are because the church has not been involved enough in politics. First of all, we act like politics is some dirty word. Politics is just the systems, right? We patriots have died so that I get to vote. I don't have to sit down and do what people tell me to do. I get to vote. We the people are the government. But if we don't vote, we cease to be the government. If we don't get involved politically, we cease to be we the people. And so we have the greatest system in the history of the world, but we have Christians foolish enough to say, well, I don't want to get too close to that. You're just creating a vacuum so the devil can get in. And I'll tell you something. You know what happens when Christians get involved in politics? Slavery gets abolished because of Christians. The slave trade was abolished. I wrote a book about William Wilberforce. Because of him bringing his Christian faith into politics, he was a politician. He was able to bring about the abolition of this satanic thing called slave trade and to bring about the abolition of slavery eventually. And Frederick Douglass and Lincoln looked to him as the hero. He was a politician, and he saw that this is a tool that we have to effect change for God's purposes. The whole civil rights movement came out of the churches, but it was enacted into legislation. So this is a false division that Christians have put up, and we have really been, it's almost like self-censoring. Like, well, I don't want to say something wrong, so I won't talk. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? You're living in fear, and that's a sin. And you do not understand that God is calling you to fearlessly live out your faith in every sphere. And if you don't, then evil will take over. The reason we are where we are is because Christians have shrunk from political engagement, from cultural engagement. We just want to do what's safe. Well, God did not die on the cross for us to do what is safe. We're supposed to live out our faith boldly, wildly. And you know what? Even if you make a mistake, God is merciful. But to sit on your hands and do nothing because you're afraid to make a mistake, that is it's a different kind of sin, but it is absolutely a sin. It's what the German church did. The results are a nightmare. And yeah. I think to myself, we in the American church, we drank this Kool-Aid, and we've become part of the problem. And that's why I wrote the book Letter to the American Church, and why we made the film, because we've got to shake Christians out of our stupor and say, hey, Christians, God has given you an open door to be an influence for good for his purposes. If you don't do it, it doesn't happen. It's up to us.
Okay, so when you describe the idol making of family, I've described this in the show. I did that, Eric. I actually made my daughter more important than God. I did, and it cost her dearly. She was a young girl and had a big, promising speed skating career, but there was practices on Sunday. So, hey, we traded church, but man, I talked a lot about God to my daughter, and then she watched my behaviors. Like, well, yeah, my dad talks about God, but he lets me go speed skate instead of doing this. So I took that, first of all, through your great humor, I think you add a way of viewing this. That, yeah, it's crazy that we could be told we spend too much time with our family, too much time with our wife, but we can love a thing more than we love God. I have had to do penance because, Eric, when I spent 6 years filling in for Limbaugh, I made an idol of politics to people. I'm guilty. I did that. And I didn't really understand what it was. But Eric, let me finish real quick. I did not understand what it was to be discipled and to take a knee and say, no, all things belong to you, God, including this radio show. That's why it's called The Disciples' View. So my concern is genuine. I think you're exactly right that we have to take the church into the public sphere and talk politics in church. But I just want you to know, I came at that from a genuine perspective of someone who screwed it up real bad, Eric.
Well, I think this is part of the problem is trying to understand where we are now. Right? Yeah. In other words, it's one thing for people, how do I put this? In other words, you have to say, what is the sin of the church today? To my mind, it's always possible to make an idol of politics. There are people who are going to do that. There are people who are doing it now. But what about the sin on the other side? In other words, God doesn't call us just to avoid sin. We're not supposed to spend our life avoiding sin. We're supposed to spend our life in obedience to God to the best of our ability. And when you do that, you will avoid a lot of sin. But I think that what happens is we set up it's almost like saying that, well, I'm probably going to make an idol of it, so I'm going to stay this much farther away. And you're then too far away. And the church has gotten so obsessed with this idea that I don't want to make an idol of politics. Well, we don't want to make an idol of anything, but we have to live in the world, and we're going to make mistakes. You made mistakes. I've made mistakes. We all make mistakes. You can learn from your mistakes, but to avoid all mistakes is to make another kind of larger mistake, and that's what we need to understand. We're called to live in this world and to be salt and light in the world, and listen, if somebody is going too far, you can say to them, hey, brother, tone it down. You're in danger of blah, 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 blah. That's what it is to have fellowship, and that's what it is to have accountability. But to all agree that we're going to avoid fighting for what is right and good and true. Human beings are suffering today because the church has not been involved in that battle. When you say, I'm not going to vote. Okay, don't vote. Joe Biden gets elected. We have an open border. Thousands and thousands of children are being raped and sex trafficked because Christians didn't vote. Now that could not be more egregious to God. We kind of act like, well, that's different. Well, I'll tell you, we're called to the battle, and just because it's possible to get it wrong, just because we have candidates that are flawed, the Lord calls us to this battle. And I think that looking for some kind of out, that out does not exist. The Lord says, listen, you're going to make mistakes no matter what you do. Do you love me? Do you trust me? I will walk with you. I will help you to correct. If you're interested, if you start going too much in this direction. But right now we're so far in the wrong direction, and we're not interested in correcting in the other direction. So that's what it is to walk with God. I mean, it's a faith walk. There is no doubt about it. It is a faith walk. But I think the church has shrunk so dramatically from engagement that we've allowed these evils to rise up. And we have to understand we've got the opposite problem. We need to be more involved. And even when we do it in a flawed way, it's going to be dramatically better. And by the way, the time is very short. We can lose all ability to have any influence if we don't act like immediately. Things are very
That's what I wanted to ask next.
I need to tell you, gender, everywhere we look, it's just,
Eric, That's what I wanted to ask next. And our time together is brief. We got a couple minutes left. Eric Metaxas is with us. The letter to the American church. Please go get it. If your church, Eric's kindly, as producers have made it available for free in your church, $9 it's worth paying for, absolutely worth watching. You just bring up the part I wanted to end with. Is, you know, that the doomsday clock thing. We don't know the time of the day when the Lord Jesus comes back. Personally, I'm anxious to see him. Like, if he came here today, yes, I'd be anxious to see the Lord. Based upon your knowledge, the research you've done, the writing you've done, I mean, on a clock at midnight where it's too late for the church, where are we?
Well, I want to be real clear. Donald Trump is not enough. I want to be very clear about that. On the other hand, if he is not reelected, I think it's over. In other words, I think that we are dealing with a level of lawlessness on the left that if we do not have a fair election, if we do not close our border, if we do not deal with the madness, free speech and religious liberty are under attack like no one has ever seen in our lifetime. And a lot of people don't want to hear that. They want to look the other way. I'm here to say God's holding you responsible because we all can do something about it. But if we don't understand how late the hour is, I think we have a year, in a sense. I think we have to elect this flawed man named Donald Trump, not because he is our savior, but because he represents the greatest threat to the lawlessness on the left. And I think that's utterly vital. But that's only the beginning. If we are able to do that, we have a raft of other things to do. If the church is not activated, if the church is not dramatically involved in culture, there's no way we can save the country. So as far as I'm concerned, we're already on borrowed time, and that's it. And LetterToTheAmericanChurch.com is
LetterToTheAmericanChurch.com is where you go. Eric Metaxas is with us. Eric, God bless you for what you're doing. LetterToTheAmericanChurch.com. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We just had Derek Metaxas on again. It's a letter to theamericanchurch.com. And we could just do an hour more with a guy like Eric. And God blesses people in unique ways. Listening to him discuss where the American church is at in his estimation. I mean, it means more than my estimation because of the study he's done. One of the things I would just ask pastors to pray about, because unique to AFR, I think, is the number of pastors who actually listen to this, is what is politics these days? Honestly, what is a political issue? I would say this. I don't want to see churches debating tax rates. That's a thing that can be reasonably debated in politics. And that is the job of government, taxation. Sadly, it is their job. That stuff can be debated. Red cameras or traffic cameras. I loathe those things. And if I happen to be caught by one, I have a habit of beating them in court because they're ridiculously unconstitutional. That's why I can't stand them. I don't want to hear that in church. That to me is not the purview of church. But you find me the issue today in America where politics is not involved in the things of God. Find it for me. The mRNA injections that have vandalized people's bodies, that was invading the body, forcing people to do it, calling them vaccines. They're not. They never were. Everybody knew they weren't vaccines. Everybody knew they weren't vaccines. How do I know that? Because they said so. They said it. These aren't vaccines. These are gene sequencing devices. The CEO of Bayer admitted it. Said we couldn't get people to take these if we told them what they really were. So that's invading the things of God. That is coming and saying, you're going to inject into your body a lie. Well, you shouldn't do that to people. We're told to not lie. So to pastors, what is the political thing? Abortion? That's political? No, it's not. It's deeply spiritual. God counted every hair on our head. Knitted us together in the womb. That's not political. The lie of transgenderism, that's not political. That is satanic. It's quite literally following in the footsteps of a demon who called herself the Enchantress, who said, I am man, I am woman, and I can make you either one. That's not political. The open borders. You could say, well, that's just politics. That's just that's immigration. No, it's not. We don't have a border. God is a God of order, not of lawlessness. It is not compassionate to let anybody who wants to come in, because you end up with people who shouldn't be in. Find the thing they're doing that's purely political. The teaching of the perverse pornographic sex ed in schools. You are literally doing everything you can when you do that to make sure these kids never come to God, ever, ever come to God. How could I make such a claim? Because when they're taught from the time they are 5 years old until they graduate high school, that if something is physically pleasurable, you should do it with whomever you like, and they suddenly get into, let's say, a church, and the church says, no, you ought not do that, they're going to look and say, who are you to tell me that I shouldn't do these things? I've been told my whole life. Furthermore, they will become habituated to the behaviors. You have to talk about this in church. Pride. With the pride day, week, month, decade, you have to talk to your congregation to say, do we think it's a mistake that the sexual left named it pride? Do you think so? No. It is an absolute affront to God. Absolutely. Find me the political thing. None of that's political. That is deeply spiritual. It is, in fact, to the root of spirituality. Just before we get to the Tower babbling today, one of the things we need to do in politics, particularly conservatives, is look, we must be willing to criticize this garbage on our side. Steve Mnuchin is President Trump's former Secretary of the Treasury. He wants the government to have the power to force media companies to sell to people like him.
Start with TikTok, because I think we're all trying to understand what's happening here, whether it should be banned, divested, or otherwise. And if it is divested, who may be a potential buyer?
Well, you know, when I was Treasury Secretary, I chaired CFIUS, and CFIUS approved, and I had President Trump sign an order that TikTok had to be sold. And I continue to believe that. So I think the legislation should pass. And I think it should be sold. I understand the technology. It's a great business. And I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok.
I am, because this should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company own something like this in China.
Have you already put a group together?
No, I'm working
on it. You're exploring a group.
I've spoken to a bunch of people, but
who would be part of your group?
I can't tell that to you now, but it would be a combination of investors, so there would be no one investor that controlled this. And the issue is all about the technology. This needs to be controlled by U.S.
Let me ask you a very practical.
Incidentally, I don't necessarily disagree that I'd like to see it controlled by a U.S. entity, but no, we can't give government the right to force technology companies to sell to guys like that. We have to be able to call that out when it's on our side. It should be called out. It's wrong. You don't use the force of government for that. Secondly, we have companies like Facebook that are not at all friends to America. Not at all. It doesn't help that they are so-called American-owned. On this program, we thank God Almighty for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called the Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Who doesn't love a yellow school bus?
Trans women are women, trans men are men, and non-binary people are non-binary.
If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites that I think back up my claim that God does this. He puts these people up on these tall towers and they're shaking around and they think they're on solid footing, but they're not standing in the Word of God, so we can observe their human wisdom failing. MSNBC can be counted on to provide the most obvious forms of pro-regime propaganda like this.
we all have a duty, I think, to remind people about what this is really about. And frankly, if Fannie Willis was a man named Frank, I don't believe that they would have been able to distract us with the salacious gossip about, oh, well, Frank hired Susie so that Frank could financially benefit from right. Susie being on the case. So it is
so
a little sexist.
I'm so happy
it's a little racist.
It's a little sexist, it's a little racist to take someone's actions seriously. Fannie Willis is a lawyer prosecuting a former president with the attempt to overthrow this election in advance. She lied about what they did with the money. She lied about why she hired this guy. She lied about the fact that they've been having an adulterous affair far before she put him on this case. She lied about her visit to the White House. She lied about benefiting financially from this. It's not because Susie hired Bob. But again, that's MSNBC, and we can always count on that behavior from them because they are regime water carriers. Second soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. ABC News pretends that a court investigating a prosecutor lying to the judge and the defense, financially benefiting from the prosecution and withholding clear, unambiguous conflicts of interests, is a bizarre detour.
Her ex-boyfriend is now off the case, but the district attorney who was prosecuting Donald Trump in Georgia for election interference remains after a rather bizarre detour through her personal life and a really unflattering report from the judge.
Bizarre detour. To say, wait, you're making a profit prosecuting this guy? Wait, you are doing the very thing you accuse him of doing? And you want to continue to prosecute this bizarre detour? Where was the travel headed? To convicting President Trump of RICO violations for saying, really look hard at election fraud. That's a RICO violation. That's a crime. To say, look hard at this. Mm-hmm. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. Norm Eisen is one of the probably most despicable and dangerous political operators in America. He went on CNN and lied about Nathan Wade, the disgraced lawyer and adulterous sex partner of disgraced prosecutor Fannie Willis.
He's doing the right thing here. This relationship was never smart. We've discussed from the start that likely was not a legal or evidentiary basis for disqualification, but that Wade had to go. That's been clear for many weeks. Now he's done it. I do think it speaks to his commitment. There have been so many false things said about him, that he was not a highly qualified lawyer coming to this case. That's been proven false. That he didn't do a good job on the case. That's not true either. He defeated, with the team he led, some of the best litigators in the country in a series of pretrial skirmishes. He got four guilty pleas. But once this controversy emerged, he had to go. It's the right thing to do. It's a strong and good order by the judge. I'm glad to see Wade and the DA's office acting fast so we can return to getting this trial scheduled, which is what a majority of the American people would like to see.
So, by the way, Nathan Wade has never prosecuted a felony, ever. Never prosecuted a RICO case, and was making twice as much money as Fannie Willis was willing to pay an expert in RICO cases who has prosecuted them all the way up to the Supreme Court. Oh, Norm Eisen, by the way, if you don't know who he is, he's a practitioner of something called a color revolution. This is where you use intelligence services like the CIA to create false flag events in a country, to create political unrest, to divide a populace, to have people come to believe their country's inexorably broken and therefore there must be a revolution. You know, things that don't happen here. The intelligence services would never do that to us here ever, you know, because it would be like wrong. Incidentally, sometimes my sarcasm doesn't translate. I'm being sarcastic. Norm Eisen was also, as I recall, one of the first to write articles of impeachment to impeach President Trump. He got ahead of the game, though. As I recall, he wrote those before President Trump was in office. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
Whoa! That is news.
On a Disciples View.
often wrap up these days, these broadcast days, with a just personal observation from me, your host. It's just a way of me offering something from myself so you can better judge what I say, get to know me and my biases and better judge what I say. In this case, it's a kind of older memory, but it's something that I hold very, very dear to my heart. It comes from a time when Dad was magic. Remember that when your kids thought you had all the magic ideas and all the magic answers? My daughter and I had gone out on one of our daddy-daughter dates. And this time it was to a place called Lincoln Park. We took our drawing kits, we took our paints, charcoals, and we took the book Lord of the Rings. We were reading that and finding places within these forests that seemed like areas that hobbits might live. And as we were in there, we built ourselves a little hobbit house. We drew these pictures. I read from these books. And then, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a group of kids coming in. And they were homeschool kids, found out later. And I said to my daughter, "What would you do if a whole bunch of kids came here right now with these drawings that we have, and I'd invite them to come and see, would you?" I said, "What if they were right behind you?" She looked at me, "There's kids." And she looked at me, she said, "Will you go with me?" Of course. We went over, and as we went running up to one of the kids with her, she was leading the way, so excited to show them these pictures. I was concerned and worried because kids can be standoffish and weird sometimes, and they don't like the newcomers. My daughter at that point was full of enthusiasm for human beings, and she's gone through a phase where she felt very awkward, very unwelcomed by the world. So I had that nerve in my gut, like, oh my gosh, I might have made a really bad mistake here. And then as we neared, I wasn't wearing my glasses, so I couldn't see. They were a group of kids who were taking a break from their homeschool co-op where they had been acting out scenes from Lord of the Rings. My daughter asked me later, "How did you know?" I thought really, really hard about saying, "Oh, Dad just knows these things." And I said, "Well, I didn't. I just saw the kids." And she goes, "That's okay, because God knew. God knew. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we speak, we believe." Oh, pardon me, "because we believe, we speak. And until God says, you and I can speak again together, may His peace, which transcends all understanding, wash over you and your families." On behalf of AFR and Randy, I'm Todd Herman. This has been a Disciples View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.